The winter of 1832 brought Washington to a boiling point. Andrew Jackson, 7th President of the United States, sat across from a South Carolina congressman and delivered a message so stark it would echo through history. Tell them that if a single drop of blood shall be shed there in opposition to the laws of the United States, I will hang the first man I can lay my hand on engaged in such treasonable conduct upon the first tree I can reach. The target of this threat? His own Vice President, John C. Calhoun, who was championing South Carolina's attempt to nullify federal law. This wasn't political theater. Jackson meant every word. The bullet lodged near his heart from an 1806 duel was a constant reminder that he never made idle threats. Here was a president willing to go to war against his own state to preserve the Union 3 decades before Lincoln faced the same choice. Jackson's 8 years in the White House transformed the presidency from a limited administrative role into the powerful office we recognize today. His story reveals how one man's fierce determination, forged in Revolutionary War tragedy and frontier violence, reshaped American democracy itself, for better and worse. By 14, Andrew Jackson had lost everything. His father died before his birth, his brother Hugh fell in a Revolutionary War battle, and British troops captured teenage Andrew and his brother Robert in 1781. When a British officer ordered Andrew to polish his boots, the boy's defiant response, "I am a prisoner of war and claim to be treated as such," earned him sword wounds that left permanent scars. Robert died from smallpox in their filthy prison. Then their mother, Elizabeth, perished nursing sick American prisoners in Charleston. These experiences forged a man who would never stay throwed, as wrestling opponents noted. Jackson's mother had worked as a housekeeper for wealthier relatives, and young Andrew absorbed every slight, every reminder he was an outsider. This bred both crushing insecurity and iron determination. The frontier culture Jackson inhabited was unforgiving. When friends played a practical joke with his gun, he sprang up threatening to kill anyone who laughed. His rage sometimes manifested in paralyzing fits where he would begin slobbering, revealing an unbalanced boy learning to survive through intimidation. Yet this same man developed remarkable political instincts. During the Natchez expedition, when ordered to disband his troops and abandon the sick, Jackson refused, giving up his horses to the ill and walking 500 miles back to Nashville alongside his men. This earned him the nickname Old Hickory and loyalty that would translate into political power. After Rachel's death, a loss Jackson blamed on political enemies who slandered her during the campaign, the White House became both headquarters and home. His niece Evelie Donelson served as hostess, while her husband, Andrew, became private secretary, creating a surrogate family. The Petticoat Affair nearly destroyed this arrangement. Cabinet wives ostracized Margaret Eaton, wife of Secretary of War John Eaton, considering her beneath their station. Jackson, seeing parallels through attacks on Rachel, demanded Emily receive Margaret socially. Emily refused. For Jackson, this wasn't social protocol. It was honor and Rachel's memory. Jackson banished the Donelsons to Tennessee. The separation proved agonizing. Tennessee relatives orchestrated reconciliation by sending them back without permission, gambling Jackson's need for family would outweigh his pride. They were right. This drama reveals Jackson's complexity, calculating and principled, yet capable of rising above considerable pride when necessary. When Emily's daughter Mary Rachel was born, Jackson called her the sunshine of the White House. At her baptism, when asked if godparents would renounce the devil, Jackson interrupted, "I do, sir. I renounce them all." Jackson fundamentally transformed the presidency, declaring himself the direct representative of the American people, with authority to shape legislation actively. Daniel Webster warned no president had ever advanced such doctrines or made such a claim to despotic power. The numbers tell the story. The first 6 presidents combined vetoed 9 bills. Jackson vetoed 12. His Maysville Road veto established he would judge legislation on policy preferences, not just constitutional grounds. The bank war became his defining battle. When Congress rechartered the second bank in 1832, Jackson's veto message framed it as ordinary Americans versus privileged elites. It is to be regretted that the rich and powerful too often bend the acts of government to their selfish purposes. Jackson's veto boldly asserted each branch must be guided by its own opinion of the Constitution, establishing equal authority in constitutional interpretation. When Treasury Secretary William Duane refused to remove federal deposits, Jackson fired him. Henry Clay accused Jackson of fomenting revolution toward executive tyranny. Yet Jackson's power expansion was rooted in democratic principles. His 1832 campaign featured organized rallies, barbecues, and parades connecting directly with voters. Turnout surged from 27% 1824 to 57% 1828 as property requirements disappeared, creating the direct president-citizen relationship that defines American democracy today. The nullification crisis of 1832-33 brought the nation to the brink of civil war. South Carolina, embracing Vice President Calhoun's theory that states could nullify federal laws, declared federal tariffs void and threatened secession. Though ostensibly about tariffs, nullification supporter James Hamilton Jr. admitted the real issue was slavery. The tariff battle was merely a battle at the outposts to protect the citadel. Jackson's response combined political genius with patriotic fervor. His nullification proclamation of December 10, 1832, forcefully rejected South Carolina's position as incompatible with the existence of the Union. Most significantly, Jackson asserted that the Constitution forms a government, not a league, a direct challenge to Calhoun's compact theory that Lincoln would later echo against secession. While maintaining this principled stance, Jackson privately prepared for military action, dispatching officers to Charleston and claiming offers of 300,000 volunteers ready to march. Yet he carefully avoided precipitating violence. The crisis resolved through Henry Clay's compromise tariff and Jackson's force bill authorizing military force if necessary. Jackson's handling isolated South Carolina from other southern states, which distanced themselves from nullification despite opposing the tariff. As a Mississippi correspondent wrote, "We detest the tariff, but we will hold to the Union." Jackson's forceful defense established crucial precedent that Lincoln would invoke three decades later. Jackson's presidency embodied a stark contradiction, expanding democracy for white men while enforcing racial oppression. His Indian removal policy and slavery stance revealed how democratic ideals coexisted with systemic injustice. Jackson pursued Native American removal with relentless determination. When the Supreme Court ruled in Worcester versus Georgia that anti-Cherokee laws were unconstitutional, Jackson reportedly dismissed it. John Marshall has made his decision, now let him enforce it. The fraudulent Treaty of New Akota led to the Trail of Tears, approximately 4,000 Cherokee deaths during forced relocation. White Americans were anxious for more land to grow cotton. On slavery, Jackson owned approximately 150 enslaved people, once offered $50 reward for a runaway and $10 extra for every 100 lashes, and freed none in his will. When abolitionists mailed pamphlets to Charleston in 1835, he condemned them as a wicked plan of exciting the Negroes to insurrection. Jackson's expansion of white male suffrage explicitly excluded Black and Native Americans, a contradiction that would eventually ignite civil war. As Jackson's presidency ended, he fought to secure his legacy despite failing health. His final political triumph came when the Senate expunged the censure resolution from the bank war. Though too ill to sit at table, he hosted the expungers at the White House, placing Senator Benton in his chair, a vindication that became to his political career what New Orleans had been to his military one. On March 4, 1837, Jackson transferred power to Van Buren before a reverential crowd paying homage more to the outgoing than incoming president. his journey south revealed remarkable transformation. In Louisville, where he'd once been bitterly cursed, people showed the same deference that children show a deeply loved father. At the Hermitage, Jackson remained engaged with national affairs and grew increasingly religious. On June 8, 1845, the 78-year-old offered final comfort to family and slaves. "Do not cry. I hope to meet you all in heaven. Yes, all in heaven, white and black." After declaring, "Christ has no respect to color," he died peacefully. His funeral drew 3,000 mourners, embracing the theme of the childless hero who became father to the nation. Jackson remains our most contradictory president, a champion of democracy who expanded voting rights while enforcing brutal policies, a defender of the common man who owned slaves, a unionist who believed in states' rights. His transformation of the presidency established patterns still shaping our politics, yet his legacy includes the trail of tears, reminders that American democracy has always been contested and incomplete.